I've certainly been touched and challenged by the service so far this morning. I have to admit, the second song made my eyes fill with tears as I think about Christ and what he has done for me and his death on the cross and seeing him there. And then we think about John chapter 6 and the precious words that are there. Unless you eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, there is no life there. Unless I enter into the experience of Christ, enter into his death and suffering in my life. And then to see two young people who say, I want to commit the rest of my life to Jesus Christ. It's a blessing. And As I studied for a message this morning, I was again touched by the old story. You know the song says, tell me the old story again. And tell it to me again. And it's beauty. For the Christian never gets old. And I trust it'll be that way for us again this morning. So I greet you in the name of Jesus, the one who died for us, shed his blood, washed us in his own blood, and is coming for us again someday. And so, for a message this morning, it is to be a time of remembrance. And I don't know what you all did. I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands, but I hope that all of you took time this week, this morning, to read about Christ's death and suffering to help prepare you for this morning. Because it is so important that we just don't come here in the busyness of life and we plop down, oh, okay, I did communion this morning. I need to get my head on straight. And it's a blessing to sit down and think about it for several days in advance. And so, I don't know if everyone did, but I would like to read it again. I would like to read this story again. And I know we're going to spend 10 minutes reading, but that's okay. I would like us to remember the death and suffering of Christ. Then we're going to look at it. We're going to look at a number of things. There could be more there to look at it. And then we're going to just, at the end of the message, we'll make a couple points that I want us to take home. And so, we're going to start reading at Matthew chapter 26. Verse 20, and I'm going to try to read slow enough and use expression so that we can try to see some of the details that are there. And I was challenged by some of the very gruesome experiences that Christ faced. As the apostles wrote it, they just kind of, I mean, you almost miss it unless you are looking for it. And I think about, and as we read over, and it says that they scourged him. Read it, it's a couple words, and it's over, you're past it, and if you weren't paying attention, you missed it. And we're going to look at what that entailed. And so let's start reading. Matthew 26, start reading at verse 20. Now when the even was come, he sat down with the 12. And as he did eat, he said, verily I say unto you that one of you shall betray me. And they were exceeding sorrowful, and began every one of them to say unto him, Lord, is it I? And he answered and said, he that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. The Son of Man goeth as it is written of him, but woe unto that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had not been born. Then Judas, which betrayed him, answered and said, Master, is it I? And he said unto them, Thou hast said. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it and brake it and gave to the disciples and said, Take, eat, this is my body. And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, Drink ye all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. Then saith Jesus unto them, All of ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. Peter answered and said unto him, Though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee, that this night, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. Peter said unto him, Though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. Likewise also said all his disciples. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto his disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. And he saith unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here, and watch with me. And he went a little further, and fell on his face, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples, and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again, and the second time, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples, and said unto them, Sleep on now, and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he that is at hand that doth betray me. And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came in with a great multitude, with swords and staves, from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus, and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, Friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they, and laid hands on Jesus, and took him. And behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand, and drew his sword, and struck a servant of the high priest, and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, Put up again thy sword into his place. For all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou not that I cannot now pray to my Father? He shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels, and that's 72,000. How then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be? In the same hour Jesus said to the multitudes, Are you come out as against a thief with swords and stave for to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and ye laid no hold on me. But all this was done, that the scriptures of the prophets must be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. And they that had laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and elders were assembled. But Peter followed him afar off unto the high priest's palace, and went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At last came two false witnesses, and said, This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God, and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest arose and said unto him, Answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus said unto him, Thou hast said. Nevertheless, I say unto you, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power, and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, He has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye? They answered and said, He is guilty of death. And they did spit in his face and buffeted him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, Prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is he that smote thee? Now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, Thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied before them, saying, I know not what thou sayest. And when he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him, and said unto them that were there, This fellow also was with Jesus of Nazareth. Again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And after a while came unto him they that stood by, and said to Peter, Surely thou art also one of them, for thy speech bewrayeth thee. And he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crew. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, which said unto him, Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And he went out and wept bitterly. When the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned, and that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, What is that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple, and departed, and went and hanged himself. And chief priests took the silver pieces and said, "It is not lawful for to put them into the treasury, because it is the price of blood." And they took counsel and bought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in. Wherefore that field was called the field of blood unto this day. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremy the prophet, saying, "And they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him that was valued, whom they of the children of Israel did value, and gave them for the potter's field, as the Lord appointed me." And Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, "Art thou the king of the Jews?" And Jesus saith unto him, "Thou sayest." And when he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then Pilate said unto him, "Hearest thou not? How many these things they witnessed against thee?" And he answered him to never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Now at that feast the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner whom they would. And they had a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto them, "Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ?" For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. And when he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, "Have thou nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, "Whether of the twain will ye that I release unto you?" They said, "Barabbas." Pilate said unto them, "What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ?" They all said unto him, "Let him be crucified." And the governor said, "Why? What evil hath he done?" But they cried out the more, saying, "Let him be crucified." When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, "I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See you to it." Then answered all the people and said, "His blood be on us and on our children." Then released he Barabbas unto them. And when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the common hall and gathered unto him the whole band of soldiers. They stripped him and put on him a scarlet robe. And when they had plaited a crown of thorns, they put it upon his head and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they spit upon him and took their reed and smote him on the head. And after that they had mocked him, they took the robe off from him and put his own raiment on him and led him away to crucify him. And as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name, him they compelled to bear his cross. And when they were come into a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull, they gave him vinegar to drink, mingled with gall. And when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him and parted his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, "They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots." And sitting down, they watched him there. And he set up over his head his accusation written, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then were there two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand and another on the left. And they that had passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, "Thou that destroyest the temple and build it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross." Likewise also the chief priests, mocking him, and with the scribes and elders, said, "He saved himself. He saved others. Himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God. Let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.' The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth." From the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land unto the ninth hour. At about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," that is to say, "My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Some of them that stood there, when they heard that, said, "This man calls for Elias." And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. And the rest said, "Let be, let us see whether Elias will come to save him." And Jesus, when he had cried with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom. And the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. And the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose, and came out of the graves after his resurrection, and went into the holy city, and appeared unto many. And when the centurion And they that were with him, watching Jesus, saw the earthquake and those things which were done. They feared greatly, saying, Truly this was the Son of God. And many women were there beholding afar off, which followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering unto him. Among them, which was Mary Magdalene, and Mary, the mother of James and Joses, and the mother of Zebedee's children. When the even was come, there came a rich man of Arimathea, named Joseph, who also himself was Jesus' disciple. He went to Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered. And when Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had hewn out of the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulchre, and departed. And there was Mary Magdalene and the other Mary sitting over against the sepulchre. We'll stop reading there. We have a detailed explanation of what happened here. But as I said, some of the details are very kindly written, if we can put it that way. I would like to look at, the first point I'd like to look at is the pain of physical suffering that Jesus faced. The physical suffering that he faced. And the first part that I see of where he started to suffer physically, and I know, depend on where you draw the line, it could be a different, but in chapter 26, verse 67, 68, it is there where they first of all, when they were there trying to condemn him, or they spit on his face, and they buffeted him, and they smote him with the palms of their hand. And I don't think there is any way you could degrade a person or humiliate them more other than an open palm slap and spitting in the face. It was, maybe that wasn't that terrible painful, but as in physical pain, but I don't think there could have been some more, but that was one way to utterly make him feel humiliated and try to make him look very stupid in the presence of a great multitude of people. And that was the reason they did it. Because also their hatred for him was so strong. And we continue on, and the next, okay, he had the trial there, and we have Pilate there. And it simply says that he released Barabbas unto them. When he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Now, the scourging by the Romans was something that would take a person near death. And they used what they called flagellum. And what it was a whip with a wooden handle, and it had several cords coming out, leather cords coming out from that. And all along that, those cords were pieces of metal, zinc and iron, and they were attached at various intervals. And they were made so that whenever the whip came down, they were made with the specific intent that it would grab flesh and rip flesh. And even it says the Romans sometimes had a hook on the end, that way it would grab in and they could tear flesh more. And I don't know if the whip that they used on Jesus had a hook or not. We don't know. But it is also, as you study into it, that the Jewish law in Deuteronomy, is it 25, verse 3, they were only allowed 40 stripes. And the Jews did 39 just in case they miscounted. And I assume that Jesus was, that they did not do more than 39, but in several places I looked into it, it said the Roman law had no limit. The only limit by the Roman law was that person had to, when the beating was done, the person had to be alive for public subjugation, I think was the word that they used there. In other words, the centurion stood there, and before, if he seen that life was starting to go, he would command the stop of the beating. The way the person could still be alive when they hung him on a cross. And I know that Jesus gave his life. I know that he said he had the power to do that, and I know he did. I believe he did. I didn't know if his early death had any indication of how bad he was beaten. I don't know. But it's said that when a person was done with some of the Roman beatings, that their bowels and all that were showing. And I can't help but think of the verse But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. The healing for my sin came from that terrible beating that Christ took for me. We continue on there, and we have the crown of thorns that was placed upon his head. And again, it's just simple language. It's not going into detail, but I think one of the things that we must remember that the apostles and the people who were a part of that culture and of that time, as they read this, they understood it made sense to them. They knew what the Roman beatings were. They knew what some of these things that happened in their age and time. Today, we don't know unless we study into what it actually was. So the crown of thorns, I don't really know a lot more other than it appears that they did not take that crown of thorns off. It doesn't say that they took it off. So I assume that he wore that to his death, to the cross. And the crown of thorns, I don't suppose that they were little thorns. They were probably as big and ugly as they could get. I don't know. We also continue in this account here, and I don't know the Bible, they're very kind in what they say about, they simply says they took him to the common hall and they stripped him of his clothes. And there was a whole band of soldiers there. And that was I didn't write the word down, a cohort, I think so, something like that. And it's 400 to 600 men. And so this was not just a few people gathered together, but this was a whole band of wicked Roman soldiers. And I think for the sake of decency, that the writers probably just stop at that. But you know, whenever a man is condemned to die by the governor, wicked, ungodly men like that have they have no conscience when it comes to how they treat a person like that. And even in our jails today, I've talked to people who have been in jail already, and they talk about how depends what crime you have committed. If you go to even a county jail, that you'll be treated unmercifully and the guards don't stop anybody. Now, I know that's today and that was back then, but that's just kind of the way it's been all through time. And so again, I think that this was part of the deep pain of things that Jesus faced in the common hall. And again, we think of the words, but he was wounded for our transgressions, he was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. And in verse 35, we continue through there. They put the nails through his hands and through his feet. And we know that because of when Jesus came back, he said, "Look at my hands and my feet." And he faced that pain of the cross and with his body at the place it was, it had to be the most miserable position you could ever imagine, with his back and shreds being nailed to a cross. And I know you've known this, but again, it's good for us to again think about it. As he hung there on the cross, one of the deep pains that a crucifixion had was as you were hanging there was tremendous pressure in the chest. You could hardly breathe. And so the person kept trying to push up with their legs, with their legs that were nailed to a cross. And you can only think about the how hard that was, of the tremendous pain in the feet, because you had to push up. And that's why they would break their legs, because if they could no longer push up anymore, that would hasten their death. And they hung there for however long it took for them to die. And that was just a small window into this physical suffering that Christ faced for my sins and for your sins. I would like to look at number two, is the emotional pain of Jesus' experience. There is a pain that I believe goes deeper than physical pain. And it is the pain of betrayal, unjust accusation, and corrupt authority. And this story is just full of that. And I'd like to use the verses in Isaiah 53, verse 10 and 11. "Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. He shall see the travail of his soul. And that was prophesied that would happen. I'd like to, letter A, look at the travail of the soul in the garden. We have him there in chapter 26, where he came to the garden. And you know, the disciples, I feel bad for the disciples. They could never in any way understand what was about to happen. And probably they look back with grief saying, I would have stayed awake if I would have known what was going to happen. And even though he said it, they just didn't comprehend it. But as we read this chapter here, one of the ways that we can understand what really happened here, it doesn't talk about it here, but in Luke's account, it talks about that he sweat great drops of blood. And there is a that medical condition that happens when people are under very extreme stress, very extreme emotional pressure. Only in the very extreme cases will you start to actually sweat blood. And the term is, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but it's hematidrosis, something like that. And you can look it up. It's what happens under the most extreme agony of emotional pressure, that a person will sweat blood. And so this is an indication to us of how difficult the cross experience was for Christ. He hadn't faced any physical pain yet as it came to the crucifixion experience. But as he was God and he knew all things, and he knew about Judas, and he knew what Peter was going to do, and he knew what all the chief priests were going to do, and he knew all this was coming upon him, and he faced that. And that was in the garden, there was that tremendous struggle. God, do I need to do this? Isn't there an easier way out? And I don't know, maybe he was there just struggling with Judas, with what he was doing, a man he had walked with. Maybe he was struggling with Peter. I don't know. But those things had to be going through his mind. That had to be part of that cup that he was wrestling with in the garden. In fact, his agony was so intense that God sent an angel to strengthen him, is what the scripture tells us. Letter B is the betrayal of Judas. Judas agreed to betray him for 30 pieces of silver, and that is 5 weeks of work in their time. In their day and age, 30 pieces of silver was 5 weeks of work. And I don't know which would have been more offensive, if it had been a large price or a small price. And I suppose that it doesn't really matter. The point is that money was more important to Judas than Jesus. 5 weeks of work. Only 5 weeks of work was more important than all that Christ had showed to him through his years with him. And I don't know how Judas could have been more of a betrayal victim, or not a victim, his mannerisms of going up and kissing him with the agreement that the person that I kiss is the one you need to get. How could you be more betrayal? I mean, how could you do anything worse? It'd been better if he come up and slapped him across the face. I think. But I wonder what hurt more, all of that, or when Judas found out that he was condemned, he went and hanged himself. But Jesus had walked with Jesus for 3 years, Jesus preaching, saying, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger. He that believeth on me shall never thirst. He heard Jesus' teaching. He's seen his healing. He's seen other people experience forgiveness of sins. He saw it time and time again. And yet when it came his turn, he turned to the master he'd always served, the devil. And I think that somehow that's part of this pain that Jesus would have had for Judas was, Judas, how did I not communicate to you what I've been trying to communicate? How did I not get through to you? We have the denial of Peter. And it seemed like the first time when he denied him, he just was trying to be ignorant. I don't know what you're saying. And the second time he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And the third time he cursed and swore, saying, I know not the man. And that's what we do when we curse and swear. We deny Christ. We say, I want nothing to do with Christ. You know, and Luke says, Luke 22, verse 61, and the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the words of the Lord Jesus. I wonder what that look was like. But it was a look that made Peter go out and weep bitterly. He went out and wept bitterly. Again, let's think of the verse in Isaiah. Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see the travail of the soul and shall be satisfied. He shall see the travail of his soul. Letter D, the accusation of the chief priests. And it's scattered throughout the whole story. But the chief priests here, they were after, they just wanted people. They wanted false witnesses. And I don't know what they did. Were they out actually having people going out and searching for people? Will you come and be a false witness in this trial? I guess that's what they were doing. That they were actually trying to get people to come up and lie for their cause. And it says, though many came, apparently what they said had no substance. A little unclear to me exactly what was happening there. But the chief priests and the elders, they were supposed to be men of example. If anyone should have stood up and said, this man is what the prophets have talked about, it should have been those men. And even on the cross, They mocked him. The scribes and the elders, it says, and the scribes, they were part of it. They mocked him on the cross and they said, if you are the Son of God, come down from the cross and we will believe you. The very men who should have been an example, the very men who should have been saying, this is the man, follow him, were mocking him with the cruelest mockery. Well, you think about the awful, when he hung on the cross, the awful words that those men threw in his face. And they were saying to him, you are not the Son of God. Because if you were the Son of God, you would never be up on that cross. Because you see, they had a verse in the Old Testament that said, he that is hanged upon a tree is accursed of God. They knew that they could get him there, that they had proof that he was not the Son of God. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. Yet we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised and we esteemed him not. John 1:11, he came unto his own and his own received him not. And that was probably one of the most hurtful things for Jesus to face, is the fact that his own people by large rejected him. His own people, his own blood and flesh, people rejected him. Letter E is the corruption of civil authority. The man who had the authority to say, this man has no guilt, I will not condemn him. What did he do? He took the coward approach. And he washed his hands and said, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. Did that take care of his responsibility? I don't think so. You say, what a wet needle backbone person was this. I read a fiction book one time. It was based on historical facts. I don't know. I wish I knew. I'd have to get the book and study into it more to know if that was facts or if it was part of the story. Sometimes your fiction fact books are, there's things that are written to make the story flow, if you understand what I'm saying. But this writer said that Pilate, after he condemned Jesus, that was the end of him, because he completely lost it emotionally. And it was interesting to me, because we have the words of his wife: "Have thou nothing to do with this just man? I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him." And if that was what she was suffering before the trial, what did they suffer afterwards? I'm not here to say it's fact. I'm just here to tell you what a writer said. And I don't know where he had his basis. But the challenge is that I take from this, you know, Pilate washing his hands did not take care, did not leave him of his responsibility. Number three, lessons for us to take away. Looking at, and I know there's more details and that we could look at, but let's just look at some lessons we could take away. Letter A, Jesus could not be a sacrifice for sin without suffering. Jesus could not be a sacrifice for sin without suffering. And I don't know how, when you think about when it is my time to die, how do I want to go? And I've heard people say that, you know, well, I hope when I go, I can go with my wife. I go with my spouse. Or I hope when I go, it's just quick and it's over. You know, it's not a choice that we have, is it? I would like to submit to you that even though Jesus was God, it wasn't a choice that he had either. In fact, and I think I'm right about this, and to me Isaiah 53 makes it very clear that if he was going to be the sacrifice for sin, an easy death was not an option. So if we go back to Isaiah 53 and just read a few verses there, it just makes it, and I know we've read some of them already, but for Jesus to be the sacrifice for sin, the ultimate sacrifice, the sacrifice once and for all, it could not be an easy death. In fact, I guess if it had been an easy death, it would give us too light of a view of our sin. But Jesus had to suffer because of the seriousness of our sin. So when I think of Isaiah 53, it says, "Surely," verse 4, "he has surely hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before his shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth." Verse 10, "Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. By his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities." Jesus also said back to Matthew in Matthew 26, verse 53. When Peter took that sword and he cut off that person's ear, you know what? I don't know. There'd been a carnal part of me that if I was Jesus, I said, "Yes, somebody is doing it anyhow, even if I can't." What did he say? "Put the sword away." He said, "Don't you know that I actually don't have to do this? In fact, I could call for 72,000 angels that would kill every one of these people." But he said, "How else must the scriptures be fulfilled?" And he also, he gave them the cup, okay? This is the cup. And we're going to drink of the cup. And if you follow the cup through, when he prayed in the garden, he called what he was facing the cup. What was it? The cup of suffering for the sins of people, for the sins of you and I. And so this morning when we take that cup of blood and water, that grape juice and water that symbolizes the blood, we are remembering the cup of suffering for my sin. And the other thing that we are saying, and I'm going to touch on this more in the next point, is that because Jesus took of the cup of suffering for my sin, I will also join him in that cup of suffering. I will also join him in that cup of suffering. We're going to pick that point up a little later. Letter B. Another point I want us to take away is Jesus' response to all the injustice. And I don't know how you, when you read this story, but it's enough to even now make me angry. I mean, I think I would have probably been like Peter. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before his shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. Not only that, he spoke kindly to Judas, "Friend, wherefore art thou come?" When he was falsely accused, he just chose to be quiet. He spoke forgiveness to all those who were mocking him on the cross. "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." And I look at Jesus' response and I say, what was the key? How did he do it? You know, people have at times tried to excuse their own actions by saying, and I've heard people say this, well, you know, Jesus got a whip and chased people out of the temple. And I want us to think about it. I think there is a difference. Whenever people sinned against God, Jesus never took that lightly. But whenever it was accusations against him and injustice towards him, he always responded in the right way. There's a difference between the way Jesus responded whenever people were violating God's commandment versus when they were just being mean to him. So that's one difference. I think that's what we should see. But what was the key? So why do I struggle with getting upset whenever I'm falsely accused, or if I feel like I've been treated unfairly, betrayed, or you put it in there? Why do I struggle with anger when Jesus faced it so much times worse, and it feels like he just, what was his key? What was the key? And I think it is this. I think it is this. That Jesus was able to do that, to face all of that, because he knew that the cup of suffering was part of the journey that he needed to face. And I think some of the reasons that I struggle with anger towards injustice is because I have not quite accepted that the cup of suffering is going to be part of the Christian life. When I accept that this is the way it is, this is just how the Christian life is, and you can't expect anything different, and I accept that the cup of suffering is, we know so little about suffering, we hardly can even talk about it, okay? But we still have our little things we work through, right? I mean, sure you do. What's Peter say? 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 19. In light of this subject we're looking at, it says, "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you." Excuse me. "But rejoice inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. If ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part he is evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified. Let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed. Let him glorify God on his behalf." Verse 19, "Wherefore let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their soul to him in well-doing as unto a faithful Creator." Today, I want us to think about the fact that when we take communion, when we drink of the cup, that I'm saying that I'm willing to enter into the sufferings of Christ in my life. Let us see, and lastly, something for us to take away. I'd like to ask you a question before I give the point. Now, would you agree with me that for the most part, everybody pretty much just forsook Jesus and he was on his own? I mean, do you kind of agree that's the way it was? That's not quite true. Okay, I know I was trying to be tricky. The point on letter C is not everyone forsook Jesus during this time. And I want to read you a few scriptures. Okay, let's point out John. John fled at the garden. He fled at the garden. But when it came back to the trial point, John was known of the high priest. If you go back and read it, we don't have time to read it. But if you go to the book of John, he was known of the high priest, and he went in there. He did not try to, we do not read that he tried to hide, well, he couldn't, they knew him, okay? He did not try to hide his identity. And I think that his presence there, okay, maybe his initial response wasn't right, but I think what he did afterwards when he came to his senses was more important than what he did with his initial response. And we read nowhere after that John denied Christ. He was there at the cross. Jesus spoke to him on the cross to take care of his mother. And Luke 23, verses 26 and 27, "As they led him away, they laid hold on one, Simon a Cyrenian, coming out of the country. And on him they laid the cross, that he might bear it after Jesus." They were leading him to crucify him. "And there followed him a great company of people and of women, which also bewailed and lamented him." And that stood out to me somehow like it never did before. And I know probably the ones that were closest to him, fled. But this is what it says. And we go back, there's more in Luke 23 too. It talks about, it says, Luke 23 toward the end of the chapter there, verse 49, "And all his acquaintances and women that followed him from Galilee stood afar off beholding these things. And behold, there was a man named Joseph, a counselor, and a good man, and a just. The same had not consented to the counsel and deed of them. He was of Arimathea and the city of the Jews, who also himself waited for the kingdom of God. This man went in unto Pilate and begged the body of Jesus." And I ponder the question, where would I have been? Where would I have been? Which group would I have been in? You see, not everybody. You know, like we like to say, everybody else is doing it. You know, that's never the case, is it? Even as I've read for all these years, it seemed to me like everybody. Not quite. That's not true. And which group would I have been in? And I think the answer is actually fairly simple. What I'm doing today, when it comes to standing up for right or wrong, that's who I would have been right then. who I am today, when I have to stand up for right or wrong. And I'm going to end maybe just a little bit different than we normally end for, I don't know if it's different, but see, I want us to think about this. That it is very, very good that everyone is here for communion service. Very good. It is a good choice. Excellent choice. But it is more important what I do after I go away from here. Mm-hmm. This afternoon, this evening, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We sing the song, stand up for Jesus. Let me tell you a little bit of story behind it first. And I don't know if I'm saying his right last name right, but it's Dudley Ting, T-Y-N-G. This song was inspired by him. He was a man who became pastor of a very large church in Philadelphia. And I know the setting is different than ours, but the point is worth making. But he would not accept slavery. This was back in 1958. And he preached out against it. And because of that, the people resisted him and he resigned. But he had a great burden for leading fathers and husbands to Christ. And I don't know why he focused mostly on men. It's kind of what it seems. And on Tuesday, March 30, 1858, there was 5,000 men together, is what it says. And before he preached, he said, "I would rather this right arm were separated at the trunk, and I should come short of my duty in delivering God's message." And it says 1,000 men were converted that day. 2 weeks later, Dudley was visiting the countryside, watching a corn thrasher at the barn. His hand moved too close to the machine, and his sleeve was snared. His arm was ripped from its socket, the main artery severed. Very similar to what happened at Leo's shop the other day, but even though the arm wasn't, maybe not quite as, well, the same thing, yeah. When it appeared he was dying, or 4 days later, his right arm was amputated to the shoulder. When he was dying, Dudley said to his aged father, "Stand up for Jesus, Father, and tell my brethren of the ministry to stand up for Jesus." And he died. And George Duffield was at his funeral. And when he heard the testimony, he went home and wrote that song that we so commonly sing. Stand up for Jesus. "You soldiers of the cross, lift high his royal banner. It must not suffer loss. From victory unto victory, army shall he lead. Till every foe is vanquished and Christ is Lord indeed. Stand up for Jesus. The trumpet call obey. Forth to the mighty conflict. And this his glorious day. Ye that are men and women, now serve him against unnumbered foes. Let courage rise with danger and strength to strength oppose. Stand up for Jesus, stand in his strength alone, the arm of flesh will fail you, ye dare not trust your own, put on the gospel armor, each piece put on with prayer, where duty calls or danger, be never wanting there. Stand up for Jesus, the strife will not be long, this day the noise of battle, the next the victor's song. To him that overcometh, a crown of life shall be, he with the King of glory shall reign eternally." May God bless you.